Thank you for calling the California Department of Public Health Vital Records. Your call may be monitored for quality assurance purposes.
We'll do a thing called freedom.
Is you gonna press the flash, Pappy? Do a little politicking?
I'll press your kiss, you little son bitch. You don't tell your Pappy how to cut the electorate. We ain't one at a time in here. We're mass communicating.
Warning. You're listening to the Agenda 31 podcast with Corey Ibe and Todd McGreevy. Agenda 31 exposes government fraud, theft, and deception. Agenda 31 endorses peaceful enforcement of the Bill of Rights by the people of the several states. Agenda 31 explains how United States citizens have forsaken their capacity to protect their own rights. Corey and Todd engage with local, state, and federal government on powerful issues of identity, property rights, law, oaths of office, taxation, privacy, and more. Their approach is rooted in the very specific legal foundation of state citizenship. Listeners of the Agenda 31 podcast are challenged to take the lowest risks with the highest rewards. Your hosts want to know, what's your strategy to make a difference? Due to the unique division of political authority in the United States, U.S. citizens are residents in every state and should not attempt to copy the strategies employed by the hosts of the Agenda 31 broadcast without first consulting legal counsel. Enjoy.
You are going to change America in a way that usually only war and fluoride can. War and fluoride can. War and fluoride can.
It's time for us to become private central banking heretics, to stop believing that this is the way life is supposed to be, because it isn't.
The courts said that there are clearly two governments in each state. We have a state government and a federal government.
Okay.
The state government that we see today is a franchise of the federal government, as I mentioned before, by voluntary consent of the people, but that doesn't mean the original state government doesn't exist.
Self-determination isn't for everybody.
Well, that's exactly the whole point. The 14th Amendment protects U.S. citizens from the several states, but provides no protection from the federal government.
U.S. citizens have several different qualities. One, under Title V, they're considered federal personnel. You can trace back the foundation of their identity to a document the government owns.
Wake up! A state-issued birth record is government property.
You know what? There's going to be 50 different ways to skin this cat.
Today, we don't know. We're like a hotel that checks you in but never checks you out.
That's not courage. That's a mafia-style sit-down to divvy up what's good for the bosses.
You know, you're going to have to shut up or I'm going to have you arrested.
Hey, how does it feel to be a Republican right now?
It's a hoax. It's a big hoax.
It's a little bit overreaching to think there's going to be 3,100 people trying to pay attention like we do.
Why don't we devalue Social Security numbers? Why not require financial institutions not to use Social Security numbers so that there's no longer the incentive to steal Social Security numbers?
The Social Security number is absolutely critical. We need them and we have to use them. But we have to treat them as an identifier.
Yes, we'll make slaves out of all of you.
Very much part of Agenda 21, in my humble opinion. It's a ramp up to a United Nations September convention that's coming. It's going to be Agenda 21 on steroids.
Yeah, California is crazy.
It is.
I mean, it's out of control.
The U.S. sitting senator is suggesting using RICO laws to be applied to global warming skeptics.
We're not policing the world. We're not policing the world. We're not policing the world. No, we don't have a military-industrial complex.
Only a state citizen can travel around without license plates, without registration, and without a driver's license, and not intend to break the law.
Because you can't have prosperity if you're constantly under the risk of a terrorist attack.
Who the government? Who the terrorists?
Hello, hello, hello.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to Agenda 31. This is your co-host, Todd McGreevy, and I'm being joined by... I think that's
Corey Ibe. Sorry about that. I'm here.
Greetings, Corey. Welcome. Are you with me?
Just when you were announcing, somebody came in the door and was asking me questions. I got confused.
Of course. Of course that's what happened. I was just waiting for that. I just looked at my room here as well. I should have shut my door as well. So, seriously.
A crazy day today. I'm sorry to all the fans why we're so late.
Yeah. Well, we don't really have a set time. It is a catch can Saturday for you and I. Traditionally, we've done this show when we can get it in before the No Agenda show on Sundays. That's kind of our deadline, if you will. We're very fortunate to be played back on the No Agenda stream right after Curry and Dvorak do their media assassination on the No Agenda show every Sunday and Thursday at 11 a.m. Central. And so it's good to have deadlines. It's good to have a compression, you know, a crucible, as I call it sometimes.
Yes.
And it keeps you on your toes when you have to be accountable, which is a lot of what we're talking about here on Agenda 31, is holding GovCo accountable. We look at the government as an adversary, and it is an adversary relationship, and it should be. That's how it was set up originally. One of the things we keep forgetting to talk about, Corey, you brought up one time recently, was this whole notion of being able to do extraordinary things that government was forbidden to do because of a crisis, right? They write up these rules for themselves. And as you've pointed out, the government was formed in a crisis.
Yeah. That's how the Constitution was formed.
It was birthed in a crisis. The whole thing is during crisis, you know?
Yeah. It wasn't like the king and the colonists were getting along all peachy. And they just decided, you know, let's make it better.
Yeah.
No, it was people killing each other amidst what the Constitution was created.
So we had these faux crises around us that continue to be perpetuated in order to maintain the fear and the control mechanism. And we're asserting here on Agenda 31, 3 + 1 = 4. And we didn't really start it out that way, calling it Agenda 31 for that. But it's a nice mnemonic tool in my view. And Article 4, state citizenship, is the target condition that we're looking for. Article 4 state citizenship means that you have not consented to have your rights violated.
Yeah, it just means that you're a citizen of one of the several states and not a citizen of Washington, D.C., a.k.a. the United States.
Very critical. And the term United States was recently brought up in this lexicon that the University of North New Hampshire put out. And I'm trying to find I heard this on No Agenda, so I'm such a little No Agenda meta guy here, but they just bring up really important things. And Adam was reading from this. And somebody in the chat room, please help me find the link if you don't mind. I'm at the nashownotes.com. It's under Shut Up Slave. University of New Hampshire, American Problematic. This is an article that was in the Daily Caller that is the source that they put out there. It's the Bias-Free Language Guide, which identifies the word American as problematic term, which should not be used.
Well, it is problematic for the administrative GovCo machine, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'm giving you the link there in Skype, and I'll just go ahead and put it in the chat room too here. And I just, when I heard that it was, when he was reading the actual text of this treatise, it was preferred to discuss individuals as U.S. citizens, not Americans. Now, this is getting, that got my eyes set straight up, man. I was like, really? Did he just say that? And so I'm trying to find the source document, right now. And the Daily Caller, it goes to a page. Let me pull it up. Here we go.
Oh, look at that. The UNH language guide decrees that language users should say U.S. citizen or resident of the U.S. instead.
Yes.
What?
Yes.
WTF? Yes. What?
God. It's time. We're introducing the. I mean, it's Orwell. It's Orwellian. It's like, no, the how you speak and identify yourself will be determined. It's emanating from college campuses right now.
Wow. This is insane.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Man.
Yeah, this is that's why they spent so much time on it on the last No Agenda show. I mean, it was like, 40-minute segment reading this document. I was like, holy shit. I'm flagging it. If you haven't heard it yet, go check out that segment of No Agenda show look into it yourself, because I just think this speaks volumes with regards to the war on words.
It is. It's just a war on words. In court, words are your ammunition, and if you're being hobbled outside of court to never be able to use the words that allow you to prevail, of course, this is just insanity. If you go into court and you say, I'm a U.S. citizen, and I demand some constitutionally secured right, what you are doing is you're specifically saying that you're not an Article 4 citizen. That's what you're really doing.
Yeah, I'm at the website now. Maybe bias-free language guide claims word American is problematic. This is at campusreform.org. And we're gonna find that. Anyway, I'm gonna put a link to this at the show notes. I'll find the source document. I certainly had plenty of time to do that. I was busy being DJ. So
hey, I enjoyed that because I was away. I really dig the jazz, man. That was fun.
Yeah, good. Yeah, I think that was some Art Blakey is who that was. And that it's Corey, I think you were listening to us at agenda31.org/stream.
That's exactly where I was listening.
It's kind of fun. You can just, you know, with smartphones these days, you can just click on that. And if you've got a signal, you can just listen to the stream. It works well. So, you know, with this war on words discussion, and we can circle back to that one, this New Hampshire thing, if we need to. Jared down in Nebraska, over in Nebraska, he pointed out this the word natural with regards to breastfeeding is now being recommended by some medical yes. pundits. All right. And I think this is a critical, this is at philly.com. It's a blog. The title is, Does It Hurt to Call Breastfeeding Natural? And it reads, today, pregnant women and new mothers encounter the mantra, breast is best at every turn, along with extolling the health benefits of breastfeeding. Promotion regularly refers to breastfeeding as the natural way to feed infants. Recent work has challenged the extent of breastfeeding's benefits, and ethical criticism of breastfeeding promotion as overbearing, stigmatizing, and shaming has also grown. And when I read that first opening paragraph of this commentary, written by the two women who wrote the treatise that they're referring to, so this is pretty self-referential here. But it's funny, they wrote a treatise and they decided to have a commentary to make sure that everybody got it. You know, what they intended was what they intended.
Right.
But the qualifier, ethical criticism. This that little the slip that thing in, you know, these are the white coats, right? Remember the white coats? They're the doctors. They're up on high. They're worshipped, and they're claiming ethical criticism of breastfeeding promotion is overbearing has grown. Despite this growing critical perspective, there has been little said thus far about breastfeeding promotion that praises breastfeeding as the natural way to feed infants. As we discussed in an article in the journal Pediatrics, that was the thing that prompted the postings all over the place, was their landing this piece in Pediatrics, a avowedly esteemed MD medical journal. Invoking the natural way in public health campaigns is a double-edged sword, and this language is far from benign. While public health authorities and medical experts generally agree that breastfeeding is important for infant and child health, there has been little discussion of the implications of promoting breastfeeding as natural. Think about that. What are the implications of calling something natural, natural? Oh my gosh, we have to think this through, everyone. Using this language plays into a view that natural approaches to health and parenting are inherently better and healthier, an argument wielded by the anti-vaccination movement to the detriment of public health.
Boom. So they're tying vaccinations with breastfeeding. It's crazy.
There you go. Using this language plays into a view. Think about that language plays into a view that natural approaches to health and parenting are inherently better and healthier. You mean like just the term government means that it's inherently more benevolent as well? The cloak of benevolence that when government's invoked, you mean that kind of brainwashing?
Yeah.
It blows my mind reading this stuff. And Jared, thanks for pointing this out. It doesn't take much inherent digging to find some of the potentially problematic implications for a public health campaign built around an argument that natural is better. A search for natural living turns up a variety of sites devoted to natural parenting. Parenting blogs and natural news sites often discuss practices and ideas ranging from home birth and consuming the placenta after birth to homeschooling, breastfeeding, and homeopathy. But these are also spaces where one might expect to run across writers and commenters expressing concerns about the necessity and safety of childhood vaccinations and promotion of immunity through natural disease and healing process. The measles outbreak of 1415 brought this issue of vaccine skepticism back into the spotlight. Some who oppose current vaccination practices believe that vaccines contain harmful levels of toxins and impurities. For some, opposition to vaccines is grounded in a specific and not necessarily illogical worldview, a rejection of the manufactured, the synthetic, and the unnatural. Studies have shown that, anti-vaccination sentiment tends to overlap with reliance on and interest in complementary and alternative medicine, skepticism of institutional authority, and a strong commitment and interest in health knowledge, autonomy, and healthy living practices. So, if you're interested in autonomy, you know, that could be because somebody told you that it was natural to breastfeed.
That's right. Yeah.
It's just really packed, Corey. We don't know if we have enough time in this episode to unpack this one fully.
This is insanity. I would love to dig into just who Drs. Martucci and Barnhill are. Like, what is their background? Are they parents? They have kids?
Perhaps. I didn't even go that far. And it's a great, that's the an appropriate, you know, thorough analysis. I agree. Drs. Martucci and Barnhill are both affiliated with Penn's Department of Medical Ethics and Health Policy and the authors of the article Unintended Consequences of Invoking the Natural in Breastfeeding Promotion, published in Pediatrics March 4, 2016.
Penn's, is this from Penn State?
I think so. Or, I'm not sure.
Because that's an institution that was dealing with some pretty serious debauchery.
Well, it was published in philly.com, so this commentary.
Yeah.
So it's related to Pennsylvania, more than likely.
Well, just the way they reference institutional authority, that was what kept, that was the exact words that were used in, who was it that was messing around with the boys, the football coach? Wasn't he at Penn State?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the things they talked about that allowed for that situation to happen was the fear of undermining institutional authority.
Yeah. Good point. What was that guy's? It was the famous coach for the Nittany Lions. Yeah, somebody in the chat room, you must buy the formula, slave. Duh. I didn't even think about that.
Well, yeah. This idea has been going on for a long time. In the 50s, they kind of framed breastfeeding for poor people. And the upwardly mobile middle class, they were the ones that were buying formula and all of that. And even when I was a kid, I remember, you know, kind of thinking that, seeing people that were breastfeeding, thinking, oh, they must be poor. You know, as a kid, just being subject to all that.
And it's
the mind control. That's exactly what it is. You must buy more formula.
Yeah. We're, you know, heaven forbid you would get the most nutrient rich food you can for your immunity.
Yeah, and the chat room says in hospitals they push formula hard, and in hospitals they'll have somebody who's undergoing chemotherapy, really sick, everything, and then hand them, you know, like a Jell-O pop as far as that's what they get for lunch. There's just a complete disconnect between nutrition and medicine I've found in most hospitals.
Oh. But I mean, it's really fascinating to me, these emergence of these papers now about, you know, usage of words. I mean, maybe this has always been going on. Maybe I'm just, you know, overthinking this. It just seems like a confluence in the last few days of this approach to how we should be using terminology. And it's just,
yeah, I think it's been going on for a long time, just becoming more aware of it. And it's just becoming more over the top.
That's,
you know, they used to kind of hide the way the term United States citizen, when, I mean, the term American is right in the style manual. So are, you know, Californian and everything else. And U.S. citizen has a very specific meaning to it. And they've just dumbed everything else out of the education system. So people just think that when they call themselves a U.S. citizen, they're being progressive and not offending anyone. Well, the only one you're not offending by doing that is the overlords.
That's an excellent point. That's an excellent point. Well, I promoted it in our subscription at agenda31.org to our subscribers that we're going to go over the experimental jurisprudence, Corey. I don't know if you have the you want to go over that now? Do you mind?
Sure, yeah, let's do it.
I mean, because I think
it was Jerry Sandusky. That's who that coach was.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Up in Penn State.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have a link to that? You can...
Jurisprudence?
Yeah, I don't have it up.
Go to agenda31.org, and it's the current episode. It's
right there. Oh, wow. Yeah.
We were trying to be semi-prepared today.
There you go. Beautiful.
Well, and this came, you and I have been doing a podcast broadcast since 2013, I think. I think that's right.
Something like that.
And back when we were doing the Common Sense Revisited show on the Republic Broadcasting Network, the blog we used back then was thirdrailblog.com. Thirdrailblog.com. And there's a lot of information there. There's archives of our shows. There's links. We've kind of condensed a lot of what we were dealing with back then into Agenda 31. So it's a repository for what we've laid out before. And during that period, someone turned me on to this document that we're going to talk about. That's right. You can go right to agenda31.org, and it's the episode 75. I've got a screenshot of the opening page, and it goes to a PDF. And this document was sourced at the sec.gov website.
Yes.
And until today, I didn't really quite understand, because I didn't do the research on why the SEC themselves would even have this document, because it's called Experimental Jurisprudence and the New Deal, Extension of Remarks. This Senator Homer Bone of Washington in the Senate in the summer of 1934, wanted the remarks of Jerome Frank, General Counsel of the Agricultural Adjustment Administration, which is a United States government agency. He wanted his remarks that he had shared in 1933 at the Association of American Law Schools in Chicago. He wanted these remarks read into the record of the Congressional Record. And that's what we have in front of us. And the reason that it's at the SEC is because Jerome Frank ended up becoming the director of the FEC, or the...
Oh, I didn't know that. Thanks for tying that together.
Yeah, well, it's just an amazing thing, this thing called Wikipedia. He was the, what is the title at SEC? It's the commissioner. He was a commissioner. He was, you know, really close to Roosevelt, FDR, and the New Deal and all that. So, and this term, experimental jurisprudence, is a trigger for me. Right?
Yeah.
They're experimenting with jurisprudence. Why? What's the experiment all about? And I'm just going to read some of this. And this is probably, I've highlighted some sections here. And it goes into one of the most interesting facts some of us lawyers encouraged in the early days of the whirl of the New Deal in Washington was this. There were two kinds of lawyers working on the New Deal. The first were admirably adapted to aid in setting up new governmental experiments. They did so without strain. Unfatigued, they could work 16 hours a day, every day in the week. The other group of lawyers worked against the grain. Recurrently, they stripped their gears. They were confused and soon became weary. Now, the surprising fact was that the first group on the whole were those who consciously or unconsciously share that point of view toward legal techniques, which has come to be known as realistic jurisprudence. Equally interesting was the fact that these same lawyers usually found as their most congenial clients and co-workers a group of economists who consciously or unconsciously shared the point of view toward economic techniques, which has come to be known as experimental economics. Parenthetically, let me say that realistic jurisprudence was an unfortunate label, since the word realism has too many conflicting meanings. In the light of its congeniality with experimental economics, I suggest that realistic jurisprudence be renamed experimental jurisprudence, and that those who lean in that direction be called experimentalists. And then it goes on, but he says, but vague though it is, perhaps this brief outline will serve for present purposes to describe the point of view of some of the men who are at the moment acting as humble servants of that master experimentalist, President Roosevelt.
Whoa.
I love the label of master experimentalist.
Yeah.
I mean, he was, you know, he took an oath of office, the making of laws, how it was all organized, everything is in the Constitution. I don't think he took a vow to be an experimentalist.
No, he didn't. But he certainly was. His record shows in my opinion, just a disdain for the idea of independent freedom.
Oh,
yeah. I mean that just is. I think he was one of the worst presidents we've ever had.
Readily. For the New Deal, as I see it, means that we have taken to the open road. We are moving in a new direction. We are to be primarily interested in seeking the welfare of the great majority of our people and not in merely preserving unmodified certain traditions and folkways, regardless of their effect on human beings. Now, that is just a heavily packed sentence. And nowhere in this document or this speech or these remarks does this author talk about the word rights or secured rights, or that's just not in here. They dance around those words. There's no that they bring the word Constitution is brought up briefly in here, and it's in a very poor light. I'll get to it. But this is the thinking. I mean, this guy was a U.S. district judge. He was the commissioner of the Securities and Exchange Commission. I mean, he was involved at the organization of our government at the highest level of the government, I should say. And I think it's important what the words they use, right?
Of course.
And when this thing says we are to be primarily interested in seeking the welfare of the great majority. Well, that's pretty standard, you know, fodder, right? The New Deal is about welfare of the great majority. Yeah. I mean, it's no secret. You know, it's just how we've been inured to it, though. We've been taught that is the way to go, right? It's the for the greater good. The individual liberty shall be crushed.
Yeah, that when you're at the top, that's always a great plan.
Yeah, and not merely preserving unmodified certain traditions and folkways. Well, that's the way I read that is unmodified certain traditions and folkways. Well, remember we've talked about how our rights are modifiable according to a county sheriff.
Yeah, well, if they're filtered through the 14th Amendment, for sure.
Right here, they've broached the topic. We're not merely preserving unmodified certain traditions and folkways. We're willing to preserve certain traditions and folkways, which I take to mean laws, the Bill of Rights. Those are those traditions and folkways. And later in this document, you can see there's a footnote that refers to folkways, and it gets into common law, how things have just been done commonly.
Yeah.
So it's like a third removed, you know, reference to common law in my view, that phrase. And so this is right where they're talking about modifying rights right here. In 1933, this is where this stuff has percolated all the way up to modern day America.
Ultimately, what this was, hey, let's get rid of the Constitution by creating a political arena that we can draw all the citizens into, known as federal jurisdiction, and pretend the entire time that it's really, you know, their state, that they're in one of their several states, and all the power just ends up being concentrated in Washington, D.C. You know, 70 years later, well, what are we, 80 some odd years later, we are where we're at today. Everything emanates out of Washington, D.C.
Yeah, I don't want to bore people too much, but just reading this whole thing out online, mm-hmm. or on air, I mean. So I encourage everybody to go to it. I'm just going to read a few more pieces of this, and then we'll keep moving here. It is the leaders of this new movement whom the experimentalist lawyers in government find it delightful to serve. For those leaders repudiate Sabbatarianism. All right, so I had to go look that one up, and it's related to the Sabbath.
That's taken. They, in other words, they're not going to take any days off to complete their work, right? Is that that's kind of how I read that?
Yes, and also just keeping holy commandments and principles is also part of the dynamic of Sabbatarianism. So it's like, you know, he's throwing a religious term at the people that say, "Wait, what about the Constitution? You Sabbatarian? You're just trying to keep it all firm and commitment and, you know, all this principled thing." No. You don't have to. It's modifiable, man. So you're a Sabbatarianist. I just find that interesting. They reject the notion that governmental devices must, at all costs to human happiness, jibe with inherited principles of what can or cannot be done by government for human well-being. These experimentalists reject the notion that governmental devices, I mean, just that word is how about drones?
Yeah.
What's a governmental device now? That governmental devices must, at all costs to human happiness, jibe with inherited principles. There's those pesky inherited principles called the Bill of Rights of what we can or cannot, what can or cannot be done by government for human well-being. It's like Katie Barr, you know, open the door, everybody. The government needs to do more for human well-being. When they see that those inherited principles have led to misery, to insecurity, to breadlines and broken lives, they refuse to accept those principles as molochs to which human beings must be offered as a sacrifice. So another term, M-O-L-O-C-H, a Moloch, is the biblical name of a Canaanite god or possibly an ancient form of something, child sacrifice by parents as sacrifice for the deity. So it's an omen of sacrifice. So when they see that these inherited principles had led to misery and insecurity, to breadlines and broken lines, they refuse to accept those principles as Molochs. The Bill of Rights is a Moloch to be sacrificed, Corey.
Yes. Yeah, the Bill of Rights is really problematic for a lot of people in government today. It's just such a pain to be a government official when you have to follow these, you know, these pesky Bill of Rights. And it's just so much easier when they can run everything administratively and just say, hey, my word is law.
And if the old principles which the high priests of the old deal worshipped dictated the unhappiness that we call a depression, then, say those men, those principles are not divine but satanic, barbarous, and cruel. We must find new principles, new guides for action, which will tend to produce happiness and security in the place of anguish and confusion. That's why they feel your testicles at the checkpoint at the airport. Happiness and security. I keep forgetting.
Oh.
These leaders start with those aims and ends and work backward in their search for adequate generalizations, that is, for tentative principles of action. Their principles are the result of creative thinking in the interest of what is best for millions of men, women, and children. Government they want thoroughly to humanize. Governmental devices they believe should be revised or invented with human welfare as their constant measure of success. And it goes on. So I think it's in your face to a degree. I'm fascinated that the, you know, I think that the awareness is increasing, Corey, of the administrative overlay.
I agree.
You needed the movie The Matrix with Morpheus first to come out to even get people to remotely start breaking their neural pathways into different paths, you know?
Yeah, I didn't hear you read this part. One of my favorite sentences in the entire document here, I think it's on page 8. It's right at the very end. It says, jurisprudence, experimental or otherwise, can be an amusing game, and intellectual games should not be disparaged even by the practical mind.
Oh.
I mean, it's just like, play the game to win. That's what I refer to. It's a game, but these guys want to create a game where they can't lose. And somehow they, you know, they think it's something everybody should do because for them it's so much easier.
The term intellect is useful. Intellectual games. You know, we played a song. I think you didn't tune in until after I played it. It was that the band Nixon, Jared's buddies.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That hip hop tune.
I missed it.
Yeah, we're played at the end of the show. It was really good, and the lyrics in it are excellent. He at one point he talks about turning intellect into weapons.
Yeah.
In games, you have these weapons, right? I mean, that's, you know,
it's what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, so there's the war in words is an ancient war, obviously. I'm just intrigued by what's going on at the college campuses, in addition to all the students being traumatized because they saw Trump 2016 in chalk on the, I think it was Emory State University.
Yeah, in a no chalk area. That's what they based. One of the complaints was based that it wouldn't have been so problematic, except it was in a no chalk area.
Oh yeah, I caught a piece this morning on NPR. A city councilman in New York City was being interviewed because there's a proposal, and they called it a law rather than an ordinance, a city ordinance, but a law for. Where people in Times Square can wear costumes or not. Physically, the space where they can or cannot wear costumes.
Well, the whole thing's an amusement park now. So the corporate overlords want to create sections. Pretty soon they'll be charging you admission.
Yeah. Well, we are charged admission, Corey. That's right. Are you kidding me? Oh my gosh. It's nothing but admission charges here. To be a U.S. citizen. If you want to be a U.S. citizen, there are admission charges. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely there are.
Or you can just bend over and take it and get in for, you know, the price of being screwed over by government.
Which is the path that a lot of people take. You sent me some clips, Corey, about some corruption in the courts. I've got them ready to play if you want to play them.
Let me get back up so I can, because this to me is just something that's really fascinating.
Yeah.
Out here in Los Angeles, there was a guy who was an undersheriff. And his name is Paul Tanaka is his name. And he's been on, you know, the local radio shows and stuff like that. When you hear this guy talk, honestly, every time I've heard him talk, he sounds like some military communist leader from a, you know, just think of a third world nation. That's how he thinks. At least that, I shouldn't say that's how he thinks. That's how he comes across on the show. Well, the let's see. So the first one is I guess there's like 20 seconds of commercial on this.
No, we're good. We're good.
Oh, okay. So it's just a couple of clips. That what happened was Tanaka, who when he was under sheriff and in charge of, you know, of a large Los Angeles, is not a small little podunk sheriff's department, that's for sure. He was an undersheriff, and Baca was the sheriff. Now, Baca was just convicted. He pled guilty and will do jail time to corruption charges in relation to an FBI investigation into civil rights abuses in the jail. And Paul Tanaka, one of the things, and it's coming out in the trial. I want to go see his defense next week. If I can get in there to actually see his trial, I'll do that. But for when he's actually going to take the stand next week. But to listen to how he twists words and how he say things after blatantly telling sheriff's deputies to work in the gray area, in other words, beat people up. When you're hitting them on the shoulder with your flashlight, the shoulder will glance the flashlight up and you'll be able to hit them in the head without any intent. But clearly the intent was to hit people in such a manner that you're going to get a head blow in by just glancing off the shoulder. All kinds of stuff like that. So he's now up on corruption charges, because what they did was the FBI was working with an informant in the jail, and the FBI had smuggled his cell phone into the jail so this informant could communicate. And when it was found out that he was working with the FBI, Paul Tanaka basically, you know, said all kinds of stuff that you don't want to say if you're a public official about the FBI, and then changed the name in the computer of the informant and then moved the informant and basically kept him hidden in the jail system. So these are some interesting clips, just kind of a rundown of where we're at right now.
Trial of Paul Tanaka. Jurors were all ears as a jail deputy described how he was drawn to a federal agent. Eyewitness News reporter Miriam Hernandez picks up the story and how it all unfolds in the prosecution's case.
In the trial of Paul Tanaka, scenes that play out like a soap opera. What happens when a young female FBI agent is tasked to interview inmates at Men's Central Jail? In the case of Leah Tanner, a jail deputy is smitten. They date. Today, that deputy, David Corson, testifies that Tanner was so curious, asking about deputies assaulting inmates. Corson learning later, Tanner had been recording everything he said. The trouble for the FBI, they needed much more information than Corson had. The next plan? An undercover jail operation to smuggle in a phone to get information from an inmate, Anthony Brown. There, another bust. This time because of alleged criminal acts by Tanaka, the sheriff's department's then second in command. Today, prosecutors lined up evidence of overt acts of alleged conspiracy and obstruction. The phone's linked to the FBI. Tanaka knew it when the FBI called the sheriff's office and said, "Give back our phone." Tanaka's orders to stop the FBI from getting into the jail to interview Brown. Tanaka's deputies persuading Brown to stop helping the feds. Brown writes, "I will not testify for the FBI. The FBI has left me for dead." 3 weeks after Tanaka knows about the FBI infiltration, he authorizes his deputies to obtain an order from Superior Court Judge John Toribio to compel the FBI to spill the details of their probe. Today, the judge testified why he rejected it, writing this note so sheriff's management would see it. Denied, explaining that the state court has no jurisdiction over a federal agency. And there was this drama. 3 weeks after the judge's denial, Tanaka's county deputies threatened federal agent Leah Tanner.
I'm in the process of swearing out a declaration for an arrest warrant for you.
Tomorrow, the defense case gets underway. Among the first witnesses, Paul Tanaka. Miriam Hernandez, ABC 7 Eyewitness News.
Yeah, it's a soap opera with this guy. I mean, it's just amazing how government office attracts these type of people.
The guy just the Superior Court thing is fascinating to me. He can you explain that one?
So there was a his legal team. What they tried to Tanaka's team tried to use a state court to get an injunction against the FBI, showing how little he really understands about the structure of government, even in the administrative system. And that in the administrative system, the California Superior Courts have absolutely no jurisdiction at all to tell the federal government what to do. It's just the wrong place to go. And the judge made that really clear when he wrote on there that, you know, we have no jurisdiction. So yeah, Tanaka should have been in federal court to begin with.
And the image on the screen was the cover sheet of that brief or that filing with the handwritten note, you know, we have no jurisdiction.
Yeah. And I don't know if you caught that part about the sheriff's deputy basically threatening an FBI agent that he's going to arrest her.
Yeah.
These guys were just so far out of control. And they had no clue the limits of what their authority is.
And this is an illustration, I think, of there is a need for a federal government to have oversight over both the administrative state government, which is what they're dealing with here, and if there was an actual Article 4 state government, if that government was acting out and violating rights, you'd want the feds to be there as well, correct?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's their job.
Yeah. And so, I mean, that I think is a nuance or a difference between what some may try and label us, you and I, especially, and what we talk about on this show, and those who follow this show and subscribe to the discussions we have, as sovereign citizens. It's very easy just to kind of cast somebody as it's one of those terms, if you will, that should be banned in the New Hampshire lexicon.
Yeah, that's exactly what the officer at the CHP called me on the back of his notes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he wrote in there on the backside of the officer's copy of the citation.
Oh, there it is. You're right. I see it.
Yeah.
No,
yeah,
it says driver stated he was a sovereign citizen.
Yeah, just straight up said. Okay. I said I'm a sovereign citizen.
So we're gonna have to jump over to this now and explain this one. We jumped the shark on the other. Do you want to play this other clip?
No, I mean, we can if we want, but it's just more of kind of an update, a little bit more detail of what's going on.
Let's go ahead and listen to it. Let's hear it.
All right, cool. Testimony in the trial of former L.A. County Undersheriff Paul Tanaka, new at 6, an ex-deputy already convicted for obstruction, taking the stand today. And Eyewitness News reporter Miriam Hernandez was in the courtroom.
Inside Men's Central Jail, caught red-handed, jurors hear Anthony Brown confronted by deputies. Not only did deputies bust Brown for possessing a contraband cell phone, they learned the phone is linked to the FBI's Civil Rights Division. Brown ultimately spills. It is to report deputies' abuse of inmates to his federal handlers.
I'll tell you now, we're gonna clean the house. Believe me, there's enough evidence on a lot of motherfuckers in here.
The revelation infuriates then Undersheriff Paul Tanaka. His follow-up is why he is now charged with conspiracy and obstructing a federal investigation. Ex-deputy Mickey Monzo today testifies to the big boss blowing up. Mad, irate, he slammed his hands down. Those expletives, who do they think they are, says Manzo, quoting Tanaka. Manzo, along with 6 other deputies, have already been convicted for obstruction. A jury finding that they should have hit the brakes when they learned that Brown and the jail undercover operation was part of a legitimate FBI probe. Manzo, with his case on appeal, today tells the jury that Tanaka yelled and cursed before ordering that no outside law enforcement be allowed to interview Brown without the approval of Tanaka himself. The deputies would later change Brown's name in the jail's computer system so that no one but their group knew where Brown was. In cross-examination, the defense portrays the deputies' actions as justified because Brown, exposed as a snitch, could get attacked behind bars. This memo shown to the jury highlights the deputy's orders and the inmate we are tasked with protecting. Question to Monzo. This does not say we are tasking hiding Brown from the FBI, correct? Answer, right. Your job is to protect him, correct? Answer, right. Miriam Hernandez, ABC 7 Eyewitness News.
Fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, it just goes to show the complete lack of self-awareness as far as their position within the overall government. I mean, this team was just corrupt. Tanaka went on to be like mayor of some city. I forgot which city, Gardenia or something like that. And hearing him, it's very prevalent. His attitude and the way he speaks and the words that he uses when he's on air talking, doing an interview, has spread throughout California. It's the same thing over and over again when I'm dealing with people that they just don't want to follow the rules. They don't care. They're always right. They're just psychotic. It's really a fascinating look into just the mindset of how these people operate.
He's 57 years old, faces up to 15 years in prison if he's found guilty of the charges against him, conspiracy to obstruct justice and obstruction of justice. It's an interesting dynamic, Corey, here that we have. When you and I met, it was at the Constitutional Sheriff and Peace Officers Association Constitutional Training Conference for sheriffs.
Yeah.
And there were, you know, some non-sheriffs.
I don't recall Tanaka being there.
No, he was not there. and there were some under-sheriffs who were there. There were number twos. Or whatever you want to call them. They had different titles. And there were some municipal and there was a couple county supervisors. So it wasn't only sheriffs, but mostly was. The reason I bring that up is that we asserted then, and I still assert today, that despite that this Tanaka has to be looked in on by the feds because they're misbehaving in theory, we also rely on the sheriffs to look in on the feds themselves.
Of course.
We want it to go both ways. We're not saying, you know, it's only just a one-way street for this accountability. If the sheriff is upholding the Constitution and his oath or her oath of office, that they should have as much authority if the FBI was acting out and violating people's rights.
Yeah, absolutely.
To investigate
them. If the FBI is violating people's rights within their county, that's their obligation, and vice versa.
Now, of course, we assert also, it wasn't really fleshed out at the conference where you and I met, Corey, years ago, that as a U.S. citizen, though, you don't have any rights to protect. Yeah. That's the problem, yeah. Right?
Right.
So, I mean, and so there needs to be Article 4 citizenship developed and reconstituted, or whatever the term is we want to use, asserted, researched, nailed down. And we need to have sheriffs who will recognize Article 4 state citizens.
And have representation for Article 4 citizens. I mean, it's not a revolutionary idea. This is all stuff that every single government official who has taken an oath of office has guaranteed that they're going to provide. I mean, it's guaranteed that Article 4 citizens will have states that have a Republican form of government and that they'll have representation. And I have yet to find my representative.
And that sounds almost a little coy, though. Like somebody hasn't provided you your representative yet. You know, government should be providing. You know, just to be the devil's advocate here.
Sure.
What exactly is your expectation? I mean, are you expecting the state senators and the state legislature, like the one you visited, the office you visited, to also presume that they are protecting state Article 4 state citizens? Is that what you mean? Or do you mean an election of other bodies?
So in that context, I would say that, like Senator Hertzberg's office, when I was there, I openly admit that they have no obligation to provide me any direct services. But they do have an obligation to restrain their own government if their own government is preventing me from having access to my Article 4, both citizenship, legal standing, and government. And it is their collective obligation, not the specific obligation of a representative, but just the collective obligation because he's part of the United States government, that entire entity has to guarantee a Republican form of government. And within that Republican form of government, Article 4 citizens are guaranteed representation. Now, that I wouldn't suggest that that means they have to put somebody in a position to just represent me. What it does mean is that when there's a situation like with the highway patrol, when I show them my ID, that they just simply say, oh, he's claiming to be a sovereign citizen. We're now going to write this up and prosecute him as a 14th Amendment citizen. That is what I mean by denying me access to Article 4 citizenship. As far as getting representation, let's just take the hypothetical that let's say here in Los Angeles, which I know this is not the case, but let's just say that I was the only one who wanted to assert my right to establish myself as an Article 4 citizen. There just isn't other bodies for that government, but I should be not only allowed, but the right preserved for me to be able to engage with any level of government from that position without question. So
you sound like a Sabbatarianist.
Yeah, I'm a Sabbatarianist. You know, a traditionalist, a constitutionalist, all the things that they try and point out as being, you know, a negative word.
An old deal priest.
Yeah, that old deal priest. I like that. But that's what I mean. In other words, they don't have to provide a physical employee for the government in order for me to have representation. But denying me the ability to even communicate with existing government officials from the standpoint of being a Fourth Amendment citizen, I'm sorry, an Article 4 citizen, that is denying me representation. If they're not even going to listen that, you know, hey, here's what one of your team is doing over on my side of the jurisdiction. In other words, got a bunch of CHP officers who, as of yet, haven't proven that they're really officers, you know, taking my property, lying on paper. And what they're lying about is framed in such a way as to deny me access to that Article 4 citizenship.
And when you're talking about how they're lying point blank about they being the California Highway Patrol, this is coming out of your informal discovery request per California Penal Code 10054.1. And you're fully engaged in the game inside the administration on behalf of the birth record, it looks like to me here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, because the whole situation is they're only viewing the birth record. I wrote that up in such a way that I can just say, well, that's not my signature. You know, I mean, it really doesn't matter because of the way that they've started this whole game. That's just me, you know, using style to send off a letter. It's really not very meaningful in this particular situation, other than to just show them how much disdain I have for you know, identifying me as a piece of state property.
You're also doing this in the interest of rebutting that the state property that they are alleging was driving without a driver's license and not having a license plate registration on your car. Actually, as we find out, they're alleging that you did have plates on the car, but they were expired, which is inaccurate because there were no plates on the car. They just made that up.
Right.
But nonetheless, they're addressing the birth record that they continue to look up in the DMV record database, even though you never identified yourself as such to these individuals. You are pursuing this informal discovery request because the birth record has an appearance coming up later this month.
Yes.
And so there's an intent here, even though you're showing disdain, there's an intent to engage in this experimental jurisprudence.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? I mean,
oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And they're taking it seriously, you know, semi-seriously enough that they're actually just kind of showing their ass is what's happening. It's fascinating to behold. I mean, it's amazing. You're asking for the officer's copy, both front and back, of the California Judicial Council form, CJ56370, which is the citation. Name and badge ID number of all officers present during Ibe's detainment and subsequent arrest. I like the way that you said it was an arrest. Because
yeah, well, that's right in... That's right in their rules. It's called, they make it very clear that you're under arrest and that you can secure your release by signing a promise to appear.
Which is where it's all downhill from there.
Yeah.
Copy of oaths of office of all officers present during detainment. Make, model, and serial or other identifying number of all communication equipment used by citing officer during Ibe's detainment and subsequent arrest. I like that one. thought that was
well. The reason for that is that's what he used as my ID.
That's where
he got the ID in order to write up the citation was from his own communication equipment. Oh. He didn't get any of that information from my documents.
Excellent point. Superb. Manufacturer's instruction manual for all communication equipment used by the citing officer during detainment and subsequent arrest. I like where you're going with this, Corey. I do. This is interesting.
Yeah, well, in his response, I think you can see.
Hold on. Let's keep going. You bullet pointed these. There's two more. Make, model, and serial number of all firearms holstered by any officer during IBES detainment. I've never seen somebody request that. Now, that's fascinating. Just to see what happens kind of approach here.
Well, it's basically to prove that all these people were wearing guns, and if they can't prove that they're peace officers, then they were wearing guns while they were committing this crime.
Excellent. Last one, all dash cam video and all audio recordings taken by any officer during IBES detainment subsequent arrest. So that's a informal discovery request, which is, available and customary, semi-customary prior to an appearance.
What it is it's basically to help, you know, speed along trials and reduce the burden of cost and expense on the system. The legislature has enacted under Penal Code 1054 through 1054.1 a system that they refer to as informal discovery. In other words, it's a standing order that if you say, hey, I'm being prosecuted for, you know, under X, you know, just reference the citation. I'm looking for certain documents based on Penal Code 1054, and this is the documents that I'm looking for. They have to provide those to you, and it's different than a Public Records Act request. A Public Records Act request is a request for records that you have to pay for, you know, whatever the printing costs are. Whereas informal discovery is something that the government has to produce because it's something related to your prosecution.
The birth records prosecution.
Yeah, it's kind of a standing order that has the same force and effect of a subpoena. Or similar, not the same. It's similar.
Right.
So the next step, my understanding, I've never taken it this far because I've never had trouble getting anything. But where the Sergeant Key has refused to provide Captain Starling of West Valley has refused to provide like the manuals for the communication equipment, the make and model of the communication equipment, as well as the firearms. He just says, oh, that's too difficult. So as well as the oath of office where he states that he already gave that to me and it's called the code of honor. In order to push that forward, I'll have to file what's called a motion to compel at the courts.
Well, let's talk about what you got back, which is leading to this motion to compel. You got this letter back. We're going to put it up with the show notes, correct?
Yep. Yes.
Okay. And March 30th. And he says this letter is in response to your informal discovery request for records to the CHP. Item one, photocopy of the notice to appear. So he provided that. That's here. And that's the citation. And I'm looking at the front of it, and I should put this up at the... Why don't you go ahead and explain what's on the front of it that's problematic while I put this up there.
Shoot, now I'm having a hard time pulling it up. I can't even find it. Let me get to my discovery page.
Yeah, you put it on...
I should have been better prepared.
Well, you put it on Basecamp too, by the way.
Oh.
Anyway...
I'm just waiting for the PDFs to open up right now. Okay, so what we're looking at here, you're looking at the letter that's dated March 30th, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So, basically he lists off all the officers that were present. And then item number three, this is the one that just, you know, grinds my gears. This is the one that is just like, oh, dude, I am really sick of dealing with you, Starling. It's item number three. It says, the oath of office you referred to is known as the Code of Honor and was provided in a separate request. A response letter dated December 16th, 2015 was sent to you with the Code of Honor attached. Now, he's responding to a court order. I mean, that's the effect of my request. The previous request was a Public Records Act request. And he's basically telling the court that he's not telling me, he's telling the court in this case that the oath of office is really a code of honor that we, you know, that we just made up. I think he just made it up right there at his desk and typed it up and gave it to me.
Oh yeah. We've talked about this one before. I couldn't remember what it was called before.
Yeah. You referred to it as a code of honor.
Yeah. Code of honor. Yeah,
code of honor, which is just full of a bunch of flowery language that means absolutely nothing. It has no effect. It's nothing. It's as if I were to say, you know, Todd, we've got this code of podcasting etiquette. And that's it. In other words, it just means nothing. That's all. And of course, they responded. As far as the firearms, he said it's vague, ambiguous, overbroad, and unduly burdensome for items number 4, 5, and 6, which 4, 5, and 6 are the make, model, and serial number or other identifying number of all communications equipment used by a citing officer, the manufacturer's instruction manual for all the communication equipment, and the make, model, and serial number of all firearms. So those were the three things he said are just unduly burdensome. So at this point, my opinion is that they can't prove they're peace officers.
Yeah,
and they've filled out a judicial council, which I've also ordered as informal discovery from the judicial council, the TR instructions. That's the way I can get all of this onto the record. And that is the instructions of how to fill out the citation. And it's very clear in the law that the citation, once it's submitted, the citation becomes a verified complaint because it's signed under penalty of perjury by the officer. And he's signing it as being true and correct. And so, you know, the purpose of obtaining all this evidence is to, one, cast doubt as to whether or not he's really a CHP officer, that, you know, I mean, he's dressed up like one, he sounds like one, but the Secretary of State kind of indicates that he's not a CHP officer. So that's
like
a big deal.
It's kind of like walking around in the New York Times Square in a costume where you're not allowed to.
Right, right. Or writing chalk in a no chalk zone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The and so, you know, I'm
plain dress up. Plain dress up without authority.
Exactly. They're wearing guns. They're submitting stuff under penalty of perjury. That the citation itself is perjurious. It's not correct. According to the rules, if you look at the rules from the judicial council of how a citation has to be filled out, it's not correct. And the officer knew it wasn't correct because he claims to be a CHP officer, which means he knows all of the laws and all the rules. And so this informal discovery process, which I've done informal discovery with the Secretary of State, and part of doing informal discovery is to put additional pressure on the Secretary of State to issue a certificate of no record. Right now, they just say, oh, look, we've decided, we've made the personal legal determination that because we're not aware of any penalty for not filing an oath, we don't issue a certificate of no record. And that's how they responded to a Public Records Act request for oaths of office. Well, that is not anything that's really useful. It's not an act of the state to say there is no record. It just says they couldn't find one. And they told me before that they couldn't find a record of the CHP commissioner's oath being on file, and sent me the same type of letter. I then got in contact with the assistant presiding judge here in Los Angeles. And it was interesting. I didn't hear back from the judge, but a couple of days after the judge got my communication via certified mail, the Secretary of State's office called me up to say, oh my gosh, Corey, you know, we've been looking the whole time since we last talked to you, and we found it. We found Commissioner Farrow's oath. So they produced Commissioner Farrow's oath, but still maintain that, you know, there was no need to actually have it filed. And now under a request under the penal code, now it changes. They either have to say, in my opinion, they either have to say, yes, we have this record and here it is, or they have to produce to the court, because that's who's really asking for this now, is the court. They have to produce to the court a document saying that no record exists. And man, the Secretary of State's office up there, they are just absolutely loath to produce an oath or a certificate of no record for an oath. They just hate the whole thing.
Yeah, this code of honor, it says, I, a member of the California Highway Patrol, subscribe in word and deed to the following: to serve the United States of America and the state of California honestly and conscientiously, and fulfill my oath as a soldier of the law, to uphold and maintain the honor and integrity of the California Highway Patrol, be loyal to my fellow officers, respect and obey my seniors in rank, and enforce the law without fear, favor, or discrimination. It doesn't really say which law, though.
Right. It refers to an oath. I mean, it's just gobbledygook. That's all it is. It's just, you know, kabuki theater to try and, you know, keep you away from actually getting the oath.
Yeah.
And
it's a total distraction. Meanwhile,
well, it is.
What the nuance that's fascinating is you've sent back to to Starling his own boss's oath.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's like we don't have any oaths, yet you are able to produce the his own boss's oath of office right back to him.
Yeah, produce his own boss. And then if you notice on there, there's three CCs on it, which is one to the Superior Court in Van Nuys. That's where the trial for the birth record being a criminal of not having a driver's license, that's where that's being held. Then also a copy of this going to Daniel J. Buckley. He's the assistant presiding, oh boy, I spelled that wrong, judge, not Juge. He's a judge. Yeah. And then the Los Angeles City Attorney's Office. Now, the reason why this went back to the assistant presiding judge is because I wrote to the judge numerous times, and in one of the letters he wrote back saying, look, we don't have any authority over the CHP. So yep, if he's not going to have any authority over the CHP, the whole purpose of me contacting him has changed, in that the only reason why I'm sending him this stuff is to remove from the court access to plausible deniability that they just don't know what's going on.
Okay, they're being notified.
And yeah, that this is the tar baby, and now it's in their lap too. And now the assistant presiding judge is going to have a difficult time, you know, coming to terms with continuing to operate a courthouse that they know is fraudulent based on. I shouldn't say no. The indication is that at this point they're fraudulent because they've been unable to produce an oath of office for any of the CHP officers. And so if the court knows
any involved with you directly in the encounter and the engagement, they have the court hasn't produced, but the Secretary of State has produced the commissioner's oath of office. And I'm wondering if they're just counting that as blanket, like, hey, it flows through him. They're deputized by him, and it's too bad. I'm just thinking out loud here.
Yeah, well, the Penal Code 830.2 is really clear on what a CHP officer is. They are officers of the state. They have no limits on their jurisdiction within the state, and they're not limited to the authority of a CHP commissioner as far as having arrest authority. Their arrest authority flows directly from the people as peace officers, unlike a city police department, where the arrest authority flows through the chief of police to the police officers. So that's why CHP officers have to have their oath on file. At least, you know, my understanding is that they have to have their oath on file at the Secretary of State because they are an officer as defined in Penal Code 830.2. And then in Government Code 1363, I think it is, it says plainly that all officers whose authority is not limited to any particular jurisdiction in the state shall file at the Secretary of State's office.
Oh, yeah, no. You know what? No, yeah.
Yes. Yes, no, yes. And I honestly, the way they work, Todd, as far as dealing with the Secretary of State, my interpretation is they just don't want the oath of office getting out. They don't want the system that they have right now to change. They don't want people asserting Article 4 citizenship, and that is their motive. There's nothing that's been said that they say, oh, well, look, all the other CHP officers are covered because we found the commissioner's oath. It's just, we are going to frustrate your efforts at attempting to be an Article 4 citizen. That's my interpretation of their actions.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I'm there's friends that we that I have in Iowa that listen to the show, and you've had some several email exchanges with, like Merle and others that are I know scratching their head if they're listening to this, knowing that you are completely holding these people accountable. Their hypocrisies and their fraud is just flowering out of them. I mean, it's, you know, spring has sprung at the California Highway Patrol. All right, it's incredible. Yeah. And at the same time, there's discussions about that I've had with friends here in Iowa, because I have a friend who's now incarcerated in jail right now, Larry Bell, and he's a longtime advocate of right to travel, and he's, you know, he's been beaten senseless by the side of the road by a state cop, and there was no ramifications to that. He's been, you know, driving while barred. He's been incarcerated numerous times for this. It's systemic and habitual, right? He's on the same page that we're on with regards to the role of government, but in terms of how he's conducted himself, it has not kept him out of trouble, is the challenge. And he doesn't claim he's a sovereign citizen and so forth, but he has dealt with SESTA-Q trusts before. I've been in some hearings where he brings up this this trust and so forth. And lately he's been dealing with Kurt Kallenbach. I don't know if you know who Kurt is. Have you heard of Kurt before?
I have. Yeah. I just can't place him.
Yeah, he's
Kurt Kallenbach.
He's from Rockford, Illinois. I met him at Continental Congress in 2009. Fascinating guy. Very well studied. Really gets into the weeds on the tie-in with the afterbirth matter and DNA and footprints on birth records and so forth, and the ownership of Enslegis entities. Takes it to an even higher level or deeper level than you and I do, Corey. And he's written up a waiver that people are starting to place in the court and trying to make the waiver the last item or the final item in the record. And, you know, there's anecdotal evidence that that this has worked for people with regards to being left alone after they've been incarcerated or, you know, accosted, similar to how you have been. And it involves not making an appearance. And that's where I'm heading with this. You know, that the birth, I mean, you've really engaged GovCo on a high level here and a deep, intense level on behalf of the birth record. And when the appearance day comes up, I mean, I don't want to give any strategies away that we should not, I should say, on the air.
Well, I don't really have any strategies, you know, that I'm hiding. Yeah. You know, that's.
No, you don't.
Yeah, not at all. I mean, as far as the strategy right now, it's to write up a motion to dismiss and dismiss it right off the bat, which may happen. And then if that doesn't happen, then it's in the arraignment to ask questions, you know, and basically let them know I don't understand. When I say I don't understand, how did you make the jump from Article 4 citizenship to 14th Amendment citizenship? I wouldn't frame my question that way. But the form of questions is like, well, where do you source your authority from? Does your authority come as a state via Article 4 of the Constitution, or is it the 14th Amendment? You know, questions like that going through the whole process. Then once it gets into trial, if I'm unsuccessful at a dismissal and unsuccessful at preventing the arraignment from happening, or preventing the trial from going beyond the arraignment status, then we get into trial. And of course, I will request an attorney, and then I'll use the attorney to subpoena and gather all the evidence that I need from Social Security, from all kinds of stuff. I mean, the amount of evidence that can be produced on that is relevant to my personal life is really quite phenomenal. I've been engaged with government for quite a while, and package all of that up to a federal case and move it into federal court before the trial happens. Because, I mean, we haven't even had an appearance yet. So we're quite a ways away from actually having a trial. And so we'll see what happens.
Fair
but
enough.
It is an all-out battle. Battle of words. It is, to me, there is no weapon that is legally available to me that I won't use. Their goal is to put me in jail for driving without a license. My goal is to remove anybody from office who doesn't legally occupy that office, or remove anybody from office who violates their oath. And that ultimately compel everyone in the state of California, every single public employee should know that the law assumes Article 4 citizens exist, that their government exists. Their government is identified by the Constitution of 1849. And then anecdotally, I just happen to be one of those citizens. That is,
the battle is on.
The framework that I do battle.
The battle is on.
Corey, you're doing a wonderful job. I've got those two documents up at agenda31.org. Appreciate you sharing this how you're approaching it. It's very adult, thorough, thoughtful, and honorable, and it deserves support. And you can support Agenda 31 and Corey's efforts most especially by donating at agenda31.org. There's multiple levels to subscribe, with recurring monthly subscriptions as low as $3.31 a month to as much as $310 a year. There's even a $184.90 every 6 months level for 1849, California 1849, where the Article 4 state citizenship originated, for Californians, that is. Corey, do we have anybody to thank since last week?
Yeah, we do. A couple of donors. I'm just pulling that up right now. I really wasn't ready, but let's see. Where did it go?
So at agenda31.org is where you can make a donation. It doesn't have to be one of those subscription levels. There's a donate. It's a PayPal button. You can just click on that and give any level you want. Small, large, medium, a very, very little bit goes a long, long way. A good amount goes a really long way in these efforts. Corey, you were out on the scooter before we started the show. Were you getting something to do with the engraver
Yes. Compasses? Oh, and the donation came this week from Wake Me Up America. Thank you, Carl. I appreciate that. That's a there's a regular cycle that comes in at $20. So
excellent.
That is very helpful. A couple of $3 ones came in as well. So man, we're trying
cooking. We're cooking now. We're
What's
cooking.
That?
We're cooking now.
Yeah. Well, you know, it really does help. I mean, every bit of it helps. There's a lot of time and effort put in this. I mean, we share everything on the show. We make it as open as possible. And I hope there's the idea that there's a good value for your donation, that money coming in to support the Agenda 31 show, help keep it on the air, help keep, you know, the game going and play the game at a high level. That's the goal, and be able to duplicate these efforts where, you know, other people begin to assert Article 4 citizenship and then play the game as, you know, the badass people who put this country together. They called themselves citizens of the several states under Article 4. Emulate what they would do. That's really what drives me. Is often, if you could take somebody from who had fought in the Revolutionary War and was alive through, say, 1800, and all of a sudden resurrect them and bring them back alive today, or they just never died, just transport them through time and bring them to the current condition today, instantly they wouldn't have a driver's license, they wouldn't have all these things, yet they would know how to defend that they are still an American, they still have rights. They're like, you know, they would know how to do all of this stuff, and I think they would be pissed off at how far the administrative form of government has expanded beyond what they intended. And you know, Washington wrote once that he said government is fire, it's a troublesome servant and a troublesome servant and a fearful master.
Fearful master.
And so you got to deal with them tough. And, you know, I hope to accomplish that with this case of driving without a license here in LA, that put enough hurt throughout the entire system that it's not just the officer that wrote the citation, that it's enough hurt on the institution of the CHP that they've forgotten that there are four Article 4 citizens out there, that, you know, at least for the foreseeable future, when they pull somebody over and that person doesn't have a driver's license, registration, or any government ID or anything like that, that they don't immediately just default to sovereign citizen, you're done, because it's dangerous to their career to do so, that it could cause them really serious problems. And that's part of the goal of what I'm trying to accomplish with my particular case, and then inspire others to do the same thing.
and savor sweet victory.
We send out Article 4 karma. Everybody who's supporting Agenda 31, we appreciate you donating at agenda31.org. You've been listening to the lowest risk, highest reward podcast in the universe. This has been Todd McGreevy and Corey Ibe. This is Saturday, April 2nd, 2016. It's been episode 75. You've been listening to us live at agenda31.org/stream. And we're going to play for the end of the show the song Amendment 1 through 4 by Nixon.
And I forgot, Todd, I got sidetracked on the compasses. Yes, picked up a computer today to be able to run the engraving machine. These compasses are beautiful, man. I just can't wait to get them get them out there and be able to engrave them. I think we're going to have a great little offering for the listeners.
I concur. I think it'll be superb. Until next time, everybody, keep asking yourself, what is your strategy to make a difference?
Bill of Rights.
Ripping the Constitution apart, violating people's constitutional rights, and making things illegal. It's fear that does this, the fear.
Amendment 1.
Congress shall make no law respecting an established religion, nor can it legislate religious prohibition. Thank my heavens, but since 9/11, hell bent on inquisition. Let's be honest, been doing this shit since the beginning. Baptizing them godless savages within the engine. Holy water vapor locked so hot and humid, you'd have thought you was in India. Fucking morons, now we're pissing and burning Korans. When it fits the mission, and if the kid blows the whistle, then indefinite detention. Did I say kid? Shit, I meant to say a Manning, not Peyton, Archie, or Eli, but a hero by the name of Bradley. Which brings us to the freedom to speak. You're free to do it, lead a movement, better turn the other cheek. To keep an eye over your shoulder for the instruments of torture. Our best speakers, all shots dead at their peak. We're free to assemble alongside riot police and get jacked. You best be nimble if you're protesting for peace. The deck stacked against you if you need to be free. Like the press is supposed to be. Jokers doing the bidding of the queen and the king. With these aces in high places controlling everything. Keeping us in solitary, not petitioning. Another First Amendment freedom pissed away, but don't take shit from me, just read your history. When you found a document and analyze how our leaders wipe their asses with all of it.
But they're protected, right? They have a First Amendment right to freedom.
You got your Bill of Rights, right?
Wrong, sir.
Rights, right.
Wrong.
Rights, right.
Wrong, sir.
Well, you don't need your Bill of Rights, right?
Wrong, sir.
Rights, right.
Wrong.
Rights, right.
Wrong, sir.
You're too afraid to fight right.
Wrong, sir.
Fight right.
Wrong.
Fight right.
Wrong,
come
sir.
On, you know the rules over your eyes, right.
Rules over your eyes, right.
Amendment 2.
A well-regulated militia being well-relegated to the history books. The last vestige I believe to be a Cali chapter of the Black Panther strapped up at a legislative session looking for some damn answers with Governor Ronald Reagan looking at that as a cancer. Wait, Ronald Reagan? Yup, that Ronald Reagan, the idol for the worship, you gun-loving Republican pagans. He got the ball rolling on all that gun control and had NRA backing, cause we couldn't have black men doing their own patrolling. Rolling up on L.A. Po-Po and holding them accountable when they feeling swollen, the assholish. But I suppose it's good that it's abolished. After all, it isn't needed, so I can't hate, since it's only necessary to the security of a free state. The thing about the Constitution that gets conservatives unhinged, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. I absolutely agree. As a father slash husband, it's my duty to be family security, and I don't take that responsibility with a grain of salt. So if a dude, group, or entity made my home a main assault, I'ma pepper his ass with a 12-gauge blast to the shaker. Make his last name history class, no baby maker with wifey right behind me throwing grass in the air for any flanker. Cause if some cantankerous old banker decides that he wants you dead, puts a bounty on your head, you ain't gonna get bailed out by the feds. So it's on you to defend your homestead. Now that being said, I truly hope it never happens. I prefer a peaceful life, blasting just for target practice. Skeet, 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 shooting and popping cherry tomatoes off of the top of pop cans, bitch.
There's a war coming. A war, Jim. And I'm just gonna make sure I'm on the right side of it.
This is what terrorists
got your Bill of Rights right. Rights right. Well, you don't need your Bill of Rights right. Rights right. Come on, you sheeple too afraid to fight right. Fight right. Come on, the wolves over your ass right.
Amendment 3.
No soldier shall, in time of peace, be quartered in any house without the consent of the owner, nor in a time of war, but in a manner to be prescribed by law. Now what the fuck does that mean? I had to get verbatim, start to wade through lawyer trap speak. Means Uncle Sam can't have cats posted at the pad, I think. And on his face it seems his law has been left intact. Wink, wink. If you break it down to 21st century, you have to factor in the Lincoln stinks run rampant cause they camping through that Ethernet connection. Mine and data turning on webcams and scanning your every single action. Have nothing to hide, show me your ass then. I'm tired of them taking without asking. Low level 24/7 harassment, ending in the casket, beginning in the bassinet. There's much more to Amendment 4, so this might overlap a bit, but what I've gathered is, unless you're off the grid, hey man in it, or have bad hacking skills, your ass is still taking on another passenger that's running up your electric bill. Lord, our big brother, forgive my reckless skill. You got your
Bill of Rights right. Rights right. Well, you don't need your Bill of Rights right. Rights right.
Your sheeple and you're too afraid to fight right.
Fight right.
Fuck it, let's take the Capitol tonight, right? Listen, I'm tired of them taking without asking. Low level 24/7 harassment, ending in the casket, beginning in the bassinet. There's much more in Amendment 4, so this might overlap a bit.
Amendment 4.
The right of the people to be secure in their persons versus unreasonable seizures and searches shall not be violated. But if you say that to an agent, he'll claim that you pulled a knife and shoot you in the face quick. Call it self-defense and have his friends investigated, and no warrant shall issue. But upon probable cause, would have sworn by oath to uphold these very laws. Is it a couple bad apples or systematic flaws? I could easily continue for hours on this amendment, but the truth is that the 4th and 10th are non-existent, and the only chance to get them back are through the 2nd, communicated through the 1st, when we legends finally step in with dispersed verses, turning intellect into weapons and break this curse. Traverse dog shit, hip-hop has stepped in. If you've been afforded the skill, fulfill what's been destined instead of rest on your moralist laurels. Check your reflection. Yeah, you dope. Your rhyme is son, but I represent an idea whose time has come.
It makes ideas out to be like germs. Brainwashed. We've used the term intellectual contagion. Freedom is the kind of intellectual contagion that's like good bacteria, if you ask me.
Search, subscribe, share, and support at agenda31.org.